Hello, and you're listening to QSO. It's All About Ham Radio. This is part two, and with us is Andy Karstarfin. He is with the Mesquite Amateur Radio Club in Mesquite, Texas. They're coming up next on QSO, brought to you by the TW Antenna Company, Heil Sound, and Gigaparts. And when is it coming up?
Right about now.
102.5, the party has static on the air. What do you think it could be?
The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now.
The TW2010 is a most unique ham radio antenna. The TW2010 covers five bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters. The TW2010 is not just a small portable antenna that assembles in about 5 minutes. The TW2010 is a great DX antenna with a very low angle of radiation. How low is that takeoff angle, you may ask? How about 26 degrees? The TW2010, with its stealth-quality black powder coating, tends to disappear in its surroundings. This is the perfect antenna if you live in an area where outside antennas are restricted. The TW2010 gives you the advantage of stealth and high performance at the same time. You simply must see this antenna. The TW2010 is a sleek, professional-looking antenna that's very economically priced. Go to twantennas.com. That's twantennas.com. And look for the Gordon West review of the TW2010 in this September issue of CQ Magazine. Well, with us is Andy Karstarfin. Am I saying that right now?
Yes, sir.
All right. And he is with the Mesquite Amateur Radio Club in Mesquite, Texas. And we had talked on Field A. I believe you folks had had phoned in, and we did a broadcast of your Field A activities. But yes. That's always hurried. You know, we're always in a hurry. It's field day. Hurry up.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get with you and talk to you a little bit about your organization and the things that you do and the things that are interesting.
All righty.
Let me ask you this. About how many members strong are you?
Our club currently has probably about 60 to 70 members.
And do you meet monthly, or how often do you all get together?
Well, we actually have quite a few activities throughout the month besides our monthly meeting on the first Thursday. We have a weekly information net, and we also have a monthly outing that we call Ham Radio in the Park, where we go out to one of the public parks and have a public demonstration and a sort of a get-together. Very successful program for us.
Now, you do this monthly.
That's correct.
Amateur Radio in the Park. Go ahead.
Each one is like a miniature field day. That's how HIRTP started out, was a sort of a very thinly veiled practice for field day, and it's taken on a life of its own. We have folks building antennas and operating and just generally having a good time.
Well, now let me ask you this: when you set up for this, how many stations? Do you just have one station, or do you do a couple? Do you operate HF, VHF? How do you do this?
It's according to what folks want to do. Sometimes we have a couple of HF stations, operating voice or some of the digital modes. This last one we had in July, we had not only HF digital, but we had APRS. We had several stations building antennas and putting together various projects. So it's quite interesting. We had a number of visitors that stopped by. Some of them heard about the event. Some of them were just at the park and stopped in to see what was up.
Well, now, let me ask you this. The park that you're having this in, tell me a little bit about the park. Describe the setting there as to how you're set up.
Okay, well, Pasco Park is located in the southern part of Mesquite. It's a very large park that has all types of, it's got baseball fields and football fields. There's even a new disc golf. So they won't say frisbee, it's just disc golf. It just so happens that the disc golf course runs right past the pavilion that we were using. The pavilion has enough seating for 72 folks. It's got restrooms and it's shaded. Of course, it's pretty brutal in the Texas summer, but that was one of our things we had to overcome this summer. And when we're out there, some folks stop in and say, "Well, what are you guys up to? What are all these antennas and what's all this stuff laying around? Tell us about it."
And just out of curiosity, how many people do you get to show up for something like this? You know, and I guess what it is you don't actually have people showing up for this. These are folks coming to the park, the normal park crowd, go ahead.
Sometimes it's a lot of our operators. For example, this last month we had a total of about 30 folks. Of that was about 23 or 24 ham radio operators. Not all of them members of the club. Some of them are from area clubs that just heard about the event. We had some folks that, one gentleman that just passed his test, passed not only his technician, but all three, came out an extra, and he and his son were out there and visiting and gave us an opportunity to meet them and get them on the air. And then there was another group that was just stopped in and saw all the antennas and things and was just kind of curious. And so we got to talk to them and invite them to join us if they like.
So now, how do you... how do you work antennas in the park? What do you use for antennas? Do you pull them up in trees? Do you do the whole field day thing?
Well, it's a mix. There are some trees. We have slingshot and shoot a weight over the tree and pull up the apex of an inverted V. We have a number of members that have collections of these little 4-foot fiberglass poles that are kind of army surplus. You can put 8 or so of those together and get about a 30-foot pole. You can haul up an inverted V or something like that. There's some members that just, real simple, they come out and drive a stake in the ground and put a butternut vertical upon it, throw some radials out, and you're on the air in 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, very good. So then what you're doing then, you're basically operating a lot of HF for these folks that are passing by.
Well, HF and demonstrating other things, VHF. Ham Radio in the Park is essentially a mini field day every month. So by the time we got into June, field day was simply an extension of what we've been doing all along. Setup and breakdown was much, much easier than it normally would have been.
Now, as far as modes are concerned, you have people passing by. Do you basically operate voice? Do you do any CW? Do you do any data stuff? I mean, how far do
yes.
you?
How all far? Of those.
All of those. Okay.
Yes. Well. We have mostly voice. You know, that's the thing that most people can relate to. But a lot of folks are surprised that we still have some operators who run on CW. And we've got several operators that are well-versed in the digital modes, PSK31 and slow scan television, things like that. And we try to demonstrate to folks that it's not just, you know, not just talking and tapping. There's you know, we're up to date as well.
Well, you know, I can just, I can imagine today, especially today, it wasn't too bad maybe 20, 30 years ago, but today, folks have become more removed from ham radio. They don't know a lot of the general public. They haven't got a clue as to what it is. And in a way, that's kind of good because they don't have a lot of the negative connotations that maybe we would have had 20 years ago, you know, where people viewed, you know, all of us hams as mad scientists. You know, we were in the basement with all those tubes glowing, you know, that type of thing. But now,
yeah, that,
go ahead.
And that image still persists, but then at the same time, you know, we encourage folks, because we do this out in an open area, instead of being like in a trailer or something, you know, folks are welcome to walk up, and we're very inviting. If they have questions, the purpose that we're out there is to show them this, and if they're interested, they can sit down and get right on the air if they're like. We really want to be open and inviting.
Well, I guess what I was saying is a person walks up and sees somebody working, you know, a paddle or a key and communicating in Morse code back and forth. That has to be something totally rare. I mean, you just don't see that anywhere.
That's true, and a lot of folks are quite fascinated that something as simple as that can still be as effective as it is. You know, if you actually understand that. I said, yeah, I can sit down with a pad and a piece of paper, and you tune up on there, and as they send it, I'll write it down, and it'll make sense when it's done.
Well, you know, that's another thing too, and that is, you know, as a young person, I can tell you that I had never, in other words, I'd heard about CW. I had heard people talk about CW. Of course, in order to get your novice ticket back then, you had to have 5 words a minute. And but you know what? It was a whole different world when I saw somebody sit down in front of a key that really loved CW and was really into it and started making contacts and conversing over the air. It took on a whole different dimension than just hearing about it, reading it in a book, and actually hearing. You know, I had copied CW on the air, but boy, when you sit down beside somebody that really loves it, it takes on a whole different perspective, I think. I don't. Do you believe that, or am I?
Well, yeah, and when I was learning it as well, you know, there's all types of ways to learn it. You know, tapes and computer programs and things like that. But my Elmer shared with me something very simple. He said, Andy, the best way to learn this is to get on there and just do it. I mean, and nothing replaces the pressure, for lack of a better term, of copying what the other fella is sending to you so you can go back to him and answer his questions.
That's true. It really is, because there is some pressure there, you know, and then there's that desire that, I miss that character. I miss those three characters, you know, And I need to practice these. You know, you go back and you listen. But CW is not as difficult as a lot of folks think it is. And I know that it's always been a hurdle to the license, but the hurdle was always in the mind of the person that it became a hurdle to. And the example, since Dayton, you know, I've had a chance to talk to Gordon West. I talked to the folks at Vibraplex. The thing that I'm hearing is that they're selling more of the code tapes. Vibraplex is doing a lot of business now that the code is not a requirement. It seems like people are seeking it out and they want to operate CW. They want to learn CW. And I think that's weird, but I think it's also very cool that that's actually what's going on. So I think
this is probably a bit of a harsh view, but if you think about it, Morse code is very simple. The language I'm speaking to you right now is infinitely more complex and coming at you a whole lot faster than 5 words a minute. And someone that says, well, I just can't hear the beeps or the tones, they don't want to. If you want to, you can sit down and learn it.
Well, you know, I think too, one of the problems is that a lot of folks become preconditioned to think that it's impossible to learn or it's difficult to learn. And a lot of people tend to think that it's like music. In other words, and it is to a certain degree. Now, there are those folks that have a problem because for some reason they have a hard time distinguishing between dits and das, the length of the thing. It's just they're just totally thrown off by it. And, of course, when I was very young, I was told, you know, listen for the sound. Do not convert this thing to dots and dashes. Don't convert it to shorts and longs. Learn
exactly.
Each character by its unique sound, you know, and if you do that. But then I see these guys that copy 40 words a minute in their head, you know, and it's like, how do they do that? That's voodoo. That's got
to
be.
Well, I was told the best way to do that is when you hear a dit, don't ever let it enter your brain. It hits your ear, slides down the side of your neck, across your shoulder, into your arm, and you write it on the paper. You don't ever let it enter your head. And, of course, as you get up in speed, you realize these guys that are copying those, what we consider to be phenomenal speeds, you know, when you get up to about 20 words a minute or so, you start hearing short words, and not individual characters, but short words. And after a while, you start hearing complete long words. It's just like you learn this language, it's just another language that you learn to adapt to.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this is a fantastic idea that you've got here, or that you folks are doing this, and I don't know, maybe other people are doing it too. But to think that you're setting up every month. Now, do you get a lot of cold weather in Mesquite, Texas? Do you get chilly weather down?
Well, you know, there's only two seasons here in Texas. There's blazing hot summer, and then there's a cool, wet period. We get the occasional, you know, cold and ice and things like that, but for the most part, the winters are fairly mild. During the spring and summer, we like to hold the event outdoors. In the winter and deep of the winter, or in the middle of the summer, we like to rent like a room in one of the community centers and drop a coax out the exit door and operate a little more comfortably inside. What this, you know, of course, Field Day and all of its associated activities are an emergency preparedness drill, and so that's the underlying aspect to it. So we're getting folks accustomed to operating in various environments. We move it around. Sometimes it's indoors, sometimes it's outdoors, sometimes you'll be operating in a community center. So we change it up to give different folks a chance to come out, but to also expose everyone to various environments that they might be asked to go serve in should something happen.
Our guest is Andy Karstarfen. I'm going to be back with him in just a moment. We're going to take a break. The TW2010 is a most unique ham radio antenna. The TW2010 covers 5 bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters. The TW2010 is not just a small portable antenna that assembles in about 5 minutes. The TW2010 is a great DX antenna with a very low angle of radiation. How low is that takeoff angle, you may ask? How about 26 degrees? The TW2010, with its stealth-quality black powder coating, tends to disappear in its surroundings. This is the perfect antenna if you live in an area where outside antennas are restricted. The TW2010 gives you the advantage of stealth and high performance at the same time. You simply must see this antenna. The TW2010 is a sleek, professional-looking antenna that's very economically priced. Go to twantennas.com. That's twantennas.com. And look for the Gordon West review of the TW2010 in this September issue of CQ Magazine. Andy Karstarfin is with us. He is with the Mesquite, Texas Amateur Radio Club, and we were just talking about their once-a-month activity, and you call it again?
We call it Ham Radio in the Park.
Ham Radio in the Park. It's like the Bark in the Park thing that they do. The animal shelters have these things, these little deals called Bark in the Park. So this is Ham Radio in the Park.
Exactly the same thing.
Okay, now you said that something else you said, and when we took the break, and I want to make sure that we include this in the broadcast, you say people bring projects down, and they bring antennas, and they bring different things that they may be working on. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, for example, some of the newer operators that get on there very often, they say, well, I'm using a mag mount on top of the refrigerator or something like that. And one of the simple antennas that we get them, we come out there, I come out there with a connector and a handful of coat hangers, and we will build what we call the Kotanga antenna because it's made out of coat hangers, and hang it from a piece of string on the beam. One of our members, Tim, KD6FWD, is very good with building J-pole antennas, and so they'll be out there with the copper tubes and the fittings and putting them together and tuning it up right there and operating on it. And so when they come there, they came there with a bag of parts and pieces of copper pipe and things like that. They're leaving with an actual, you know, J-pole antenna that they can go out and put it, you know, stick it up, and they'll be on the air right there.
So now these are the folks that come and bring this stuff in. They bring in the tubing and all that. Are these already amateurs? Are these people that are you know, thinking about getting into amateur radio and they can bring the copper tubing to build an antenna? Now, how does that work?
That it's a mix. We have a very active 2-meter repeater. Lots of folks listen to it, and we talk up the Radio in the Park event, to say when and where it's going to be. It's announced, it's put up on the Yahoo group, things like that. And so sometimes they're new operators. Sometimes they're operators that have been out there for a long time, but said, you know, I'd like to build one of these. And there's going to be a group of people out there that's, you know, got a propane torch and a solder and everything that can help me build this and tune it up right there. So. It's a great chance. Sometimes they're brand new hams, and sometimes they've been at it for many years, but it's a chance to get together and to trade ideas and get some Elmering.
That's very good. That's incredible. Ham Radio in the Park once a month. Yeah. Now, every club in the country should do this. This sounds like this would be fun because it's something to look forward to, you know, and of course you've got a membership there that's large enough to where if they turn out, It doesn't really take a whole lot of people to do this either. I mean, you can do this with, what, half a handful of people.
Yes, it doesn't take very much. We usually have, like I say, we do it, it's a six-hour, we run it for 6 hours, and it's usually like from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. or from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., you know, either the morning or the evening. Sometimes the evening is nice because once the sun goes down, if somebody wants to build and raise like a 75-meter dipole or something, then, you know, after it goes down, they'll have that opportunity. We change it up a bit. It's not always at the same day of the month or same time. It gives different folks whose schedule might not allow them to a chance to come in. But if you want to come out and bring some wire and put together an antenna and raise it up and get on the air with it, well, this is the perfect opportunity to do that.
Now, how do you publicize this event? I don't want to just stay on this, but this is really fascinating. How do you go about publicizing it? Or being that it's in the park, does it sort of self-publicize?
Well, no, we talk it up on the air. We have our monthly nets, and everybody who has a little project is always talking about it. You know, why don't you bring that out to the next Ham Radio in the Park, and we'll work on it. We do some publicity with the local newspapers. Usually there's a community calendar or something like that, and we get, you know, contact them, and when they have a space available, they'll put it up a week or so before the event. And so a little bit of publicity. Some of it is, you know, just on the air, and then some of it is in print. We do have visitors that do respond to the printed announcements.
Well, very, very good. Well, this is interesting. So now tell me a little bit more. You said this is just one of the activities that you folks are into. Tell me a little bit about other things that go on in the Mesquite Amateur Radio Club.
Well, of course, we've got a monthly calendar that's probably got about, it varies month by month, but we have the monthly meeting. We have at a local restaurant. Every week on Tuesdays, we have a meeting on the air, sort of an information net. On the Sunday following the club meeting, we have a monthly transmitter hunt. As I mentioned, Ham Radio in the Park is a monthly event. And then, of course, we have, some transient events, public service events. For example, here in Mesquite, two of the big ones are the Mesquite Rodeo Parade, which usually occurs around March or so, with the opening of the Mesquite Rodeo. Another big event that we have in June is the Mesquite Rodeo Bike Ride. We provide safety and communications for that event as well.
Now, you know, you were talking about that you folks, when you have your monthly meetings, tell me a little bit how you guys conduct a meeting, because obviously you've got a very active group, and this is nothing against anybody's amateur radio club, but boy, there's nothing worse than a dull meeting, you know, or two or three dull meetings in a row. So tell me about your format. Yeah, well, how do you do that? How do you do
it? One of the very most important things as public information officer, it's my responsibility to make sure that everyone, not just, you know, the members that we know, but if we see an unfamiliar face, we can walk over and we talk to that person, we say hi, we shake their hands, we get to know them. I've heard some horror stories about people going to a meeting and nobody pays attention. They don't even say hi or anything. So the first thing we do is we make guests feel very welcome. At the beginning of the meeting, we go around the room and we have everyone introduce themselves. We also ask if there's been anyone with a new license or anyone who's upgraded. They usually get a standing ovation. We'll work into introductions and things like that. Then we'll get, it kind of depends on what's going. Sometimes, depending on what we've got for a program that month, the program may go first, particularly if the presenters come from a long way off. We don't want them to sit through a business meeting, or we'll have the business meeting first, and then we'll take a break, and then come back after that, and usually have some type of program. Sometimes it's somebody from outside the club. Sometimes it's someone within our own organization that has a specialty. Last month, our presentation was on the how to set up the logbook of the world, and then this month coming up, the meeting will be the program will be sort of a debrief, if you will, of field day. We want to see what folks liked, and you know what they would like to see changed, and things like that, if anything. And so we'll just kind of go over and see if we think we achieved our goals, and if we did, that's great. If there's something we need to work on for next year, then that's what we'll put down.
Your meeting follows. You've got a little set pattern here as to what you do, but one thing you are doing is you're involving everyone. You're asking somebody, hey, has there been anybody that's got a new license? Are you new? Or are you a guest? And then you actively make sure that inside the club meeting, that even after the club meeting, people walk up, shake hands, and say, hey, how you doing? And, you know, welcome and come back and all that sort of thing.
Yes, we make sure that if they have questions, that they get paired off with an Elmer, somebody they can call and ask questions and for guidance and things like that. We want to make sure that they get all their questions answered and they get the help that they need.
Now, you say you pair them off with an Elmer. Is this an organized thing, or is it something that just kind of happens on its own?
We try, it's sort of half and half. Usually, we have well identified the folks that are new and want to help them along. So there's a handful of us, mostly the shorter call sign folks, the extra classes, who will identify these folks and sort of take them under their wing. If nothing else, you give them a card with your name and your phone number on it, and say, "Listen, if you got any questions, you know, that you need answered, just give us a holler. That's what we're here for."
Okay, now I'm gonna bring up something here. This may be a little sensitive subject. Different parts of the country, it doesn't quite work like this. And what I mean is, there are some folks that are not quite so willing to welcome new radio amateurs, especially young radio amateurs. And I've had several conversations with folks around the country who do an awful lot of mentoring and Elmering, and what they're telling me is some of the younger folks have just taken to CW to get away from being, I guess I want to say, harassed a little bit, you know, or run off, literally. We've had it in the problem. We've had this problem in the area where I'm at. I'm curious, how do you, is there any necessity to combat that kind of behavior in your area, or are you folks just naturally nice people?
I would have to say it's probably the former. I mean, most everybody here is pretty friendly and outgoing. I don't know, honestly, I don't know a ham radio operator in the world that doesn't love to hear the sound of their own voice. I don't think we've had that much of a problem. I love it when I hear a new voice on the repeater, particularly if it's a young voice. Sometimes, you know, the adults will, kind of ignore them or push them aside, and I like to draw them out. If I have to compete for airtime on the repeater for a couple of teenagers that are sitting there talking, I'm in heaven.
Well, yeah, and I think that is very, very cool. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen like that across the country. And that's kind of a hot button with me. And I feel like we really ought to be friendlier to the young people, and we ought to need to move over and let them let them get in the driver's seat, so to speak. And
every chance we get. I mean, if you were out there at field day, if we had a young one that wanted to get there, sit down and kind of coach them and say, here it is, give it a try. I don't want it to be alien. I had three young men, and I pulled into the driveway this afternoon. I had three young men who were out playing in the alley, and they were asking questions about my tower and what are all these antennas and things like that. And I took the time to explain to them and kind of demonstrate a little bit, got somebody up on the radio and talked to them and asked them where they were and things like that. So I think it's my personal opinion that's vitally important to bring young folks into the hobby. And whatever you've got to do, you got to make them feel welcome.
Our guest is Andy Karstarfen. He's with the Mesquite Amateur Radio Club in Texas. We'll be back right after this. We want to invite you to check out the website at www.tedrandall.com. That's www.tedrandall.com. All the programs and shows that you hear right here on QSO are available on the website for download as podcasts. We invite you to check them out and browse the site and find out interesting things at www.tedrandall.com. Andy Karstarfen is with us, the Mesquite Amateur Radio Club, Mesquite, Texas. He is the public information officer, and you were starting to tell me something about the ham radio in the park.
Well, we kind of modeled it after a series of events that the city here has. They have the several in the park series events over the years. We've got Christmas in the park, and we've got movies in the park. The police department has this huge screen they put up, and they'll show movies, sort of like an old drive-in movie. Sometimes they do it at a local pool, so you're sitting there swimming around and watching a movie. Sometimes the symphonic band will go out to a park. So we thought it would be a great idea to have ham radio in the park, and it's sort of modeled after that. And so we publicize it a little bit and get up there and invite folks to come and try things out. And it has worked phenomenally for us over the past few months.
I was going to ask you, because we discussed young people, and you obviously give the young folks your blessing, especially when you hear the younger voices showing up on a repeater. And, of course, teenagers are going to talk about something different than other people that are older, a little up in years. We're going to talk about the same thing, So a little tolerance and show them a little love. And that's the kind of thing that we need to do to keep the young ones interested in it. But I was going to ask you about, do you folks do any classes? Do you conduct classes and that sort of thing? Do you do any
of that? Well, that's one of the things that we're trying to get going. That's one of the we've been working on a number of different projects, and those projects are coming to their conclusion. And one of the things we're going to do is I'm working with one of the local. It's a private school. It's called the New Vision Christian Academy here in Mesquite. They have we did have some lessons in the classroom last year. They're building a new station out there, and we're trying to make inroads in that area in the education portion as well.
I wondered because there's a lot of I've noticed there's an awful lot of amateur radio clubs that are doing classes, and that seems to be on the increase. And I'm also told that the people that attend the classes, it's a complete cross-section age-wise. I mean, you have folks in there that are, you know, 7 to 70 without any trouble at all. And they come in at different ages to learn and to be able to pass the test. And that's good. I'm glad to hear that because I think that's another key factor in building, you know, a real strong group in an area is being able to offer the education. The Elmering is so important. My goodness, it's just like you can't. It's like I've heard Gordon West say, you know, we were talking, we did an interview with him, and he said they go out, they get their radio, and they come home, and now they don't know what to do. You know.
Well, another thing that we do on a regular basis, almost not a daily basis, but at least a minimum of a weekly basis, is I check the ULS database on the FCC site for newly licensed amateurs in not just our city, but in the immediate area. And we do an outreach to them. If they haven't already contacted us, we pop them a postcard, and we invite them to the next meeting and things like that. And we want to make sure that that they have been contacted and that they know about us.
Well, that's interesting. So you check the ULS, and if there's anyone in your area, your club is out after those people. You're going to pull them in one way or the other, make them feel welcome.
We're going to make sure that they know that we're there and that, you know, we're there to help them along and any questions that they've got or if they need, you know, if they're putting up a tower, you know, you let us know the date and time and we'll put a crew together over there and we'll help you, you know, raise the tower, string the antennas, run the coax. We want to get you on the air. We want to see you succeed.
That's incredible. That's good stuff. What about ham fests? Do you guys do any? Do you have a ham fest? Does your club do anything like that?
There are a number of ham fests in the area, and there's been some discussions along that line. Of course, one of the big ones down here in Texas is HamCom. They're in Plano. There was one over in Fort Worth. Irving has a ham fest. We've talked about it, and that may be something that we pursue in the future. If we don't have a ham fest, we try to go participate. If they need a program or a speaker or something like that, you know, we've got a number of people in our club that we've got experts in various like D-Star. Our president is David Kahn. KD5LGU was at HamCom this year talking about tips on improving and growing your ham club. And a lot of the stuff that we've talked about here tonight was in that. And so, you know, presidents and PIOs and things from various clubs can get some tips on you know. So, if we're not sponsoring anything yet, but we do support them. We do participate in.
Now you have these. You have the fox hunts, the transmitter hunts.
Yes.
And you do that how often? Do you say once a month? You do a transmitter hunt.
Well, the scheduled ones are once a month. You do have the occasional stuck microphone, which gives you the opportunity to use those skills on an impromptu basis. But most of the time, one of our members, they'll go out and they'll be the fox, and they'll come up at an appointed time, and the instructions are real simple. There's a transmitter hidden in the city somewhere. And it's in a public place, and come find me. And as the members get more and more skilled at techniques, and we have folks who come along and ride along, and some folks use some fairly advanced techniques. I actually try to use some of the most primitive methods to show them that you don't have to have a bunch of high-tech equipment. And I would like to see more folks do that, but we usually have a good showing of, you know, at least half a dozen hunters, and it's fun when you find it. Sometimes they make it very difficult to find it. They'll point the antenna straight up at a water tower and make it appear to be coming from someplace else. So you got to use your wits.
So the transmitter hunts. Now let me ask you this question: Do you usually always use VHF? Do you do any UHF with it, or for that matter, anything like 10 meters or anything along that line? Or how do you pick frequencies? And
one of the most common ways to do it, we have one member who has a transmitter that basically you just turn it on, transmits a watt, and you just go find it. We have had variations on that. For example, one evening I was the fox, and I set up a beacon with a HT and a laptop, and it actually transmitted my GPS coordinates in CW in the message. So you had a couple of ways to do it. One, you could DF the signal, or two, if you were adventurous enough, you could decode the CW and drive right to me.
So where do you hide these things? When you folks do it, where do you hide the transmitter? Do you hide it in a park, in a mall? Where do you go with these things?
Let me think. It's varied each month. Sometimes we will pick a park, and maybe it's a park that's got a low spot where the signal will get channeled, you know, down a particular corridor, and you can only hear it from a given location. Sometimes the fox is not sitting still. Sometimes the fox is on the move. And then there's other times. Some of the things we've considered doing is having the fox transmit a picture on slow scan. And as part of that, and if you can decode the slow scan television picture, then you would have to figure out, okay, where would I have to be in order to be able to see this particular view?
That's interesting. You know? Well, I mean, I've wondered about it. I thought, you know, I wonder in a city, especially, of course, you'd have to have, you know, cooperation from the city, but I've often wondered why the transmitter hunts couldn't include being placed on a public bus, you know, that has a regular loop in the town that it goes on. You know, that would really make it that would make it interesting. It'd make it difficult, too.
Because you may have just given me a new idea for the next month.
You got a moving target, you know, and it's like, how do you keep up with a moving target?
I'll give you a simple example. I mentioned impromptu hunts. One of our members works for the city and accidentally keyed his microphone on his handy talkie, and we knew who it was. We just didn't know where he was. And so it happened about 10 o'clock at night, and just as he was finishing up what he was doing, a couple of us drove up, and he's like, "What are you guys doing here?" And we said, "Well, reach over and your HT may be kind of hot."
Oh, that's embarrassing. It's like sitting on the microphone, you know? It's like, you know, it's like the most embarrassing thing is having sat on the microphone while you're yelling at the kids.
Either that or singing as you're driving along.
Now, I've never done that, but that would be rather embarrassing for a lot of folks.
we try not to fall into a rut on things like that. We try to vary it up, and as for example, there's been a few times when we found the fox, it was very difficult, and it's quite an accomplishment when you finally figure out that the transmitter was hidden in a clump of trees in the middle of a great big field, and it didn't look like there was anything suspicious, but yes, it was hidden out there.
You know, I've heard of some clubs having like potluck dinners. You know, they'll do that every month with their meeting. Or they'll do it separately. They'll have a meeting, and then the next month is the potluck, and so on and so forth. Have you folks ever tried anything like that, or is that something you already do?
Well, the monthly meetings that we have are in a banquet room of a local barbecue restaurant. And so folks can come early, and a lot of folks do, come early about maybe half an hour or so and sit down and have dinner beforehand. When we have the monthly ham radio on the park, there's usually some snacks, and cold drinks, you know, water and things like that. The usually where we're at is in a public park, so there are some grills. So, you know, a few times we brought out hamburgers and hot dogs and things like that, and practiced some disciplines besides ham radio.
You know, it sounds like you guys really have quite a bit on the ball. Well, you've got this ham radio in the park thing, which is just blows me away. And it sounds like you have fun with your transmitter hunts. Yeah, of course, you have your regular meetings, and you have an information net that you have. For those folks that are, you know, that have clubs that maybe they're thinking, man, you know, the meetings are a little dull and boring, and we just don't exactly do anything that really excites. Give us some suggestions. Talk a little bit about have you ever attended another amateur radio club meeting from another town somewhere and said, "Oh my goodness, am I glad? I'll be glad to get home." Have you ever? Have you ever?
Unfortunately, yes, I have. And And that's, you know, you can take something like that and use it. You know, nothing is ever a complete failure. It can always be used as a bad example.
There you go.
And we try to keep things light, try not to take ourselves too seriously. But, you know, we want to educate folks and help folks where they need to. As far as, are you mean like programs? What do we have programs on?
Well, not just the programs, but talk about the programs. Certainly, I'd love to hear about those. And then what suggestions would you make to other groups across the country as to how to liven things up and to put a spark in the association?
Well, you know, first of all, try to be friendly and open. You know, invite folks in. Make it inviting. You know, when somebody comes in, shake their hand. Say hi, you know. Welcome. We want you to feel welcome. Do you have any questions? Things like that. It's very important to make folks welcome, because if they don't feel welcome, they're not going to come back. You know, try to keep things interesting. You can, you know, sometimes a program is a great hit. And now, as far as a club, a presentation at a club meeting, it doesn't always have to be about ham radio. I wouldn't go off about basket weaving or something like that, but sometimes there are things that are semi-related. For example, we had a program here within the last year on geocaching. You know, the sort of a high-tech hide-and-seek or treasure hunt, if you will. And within that program, there were actually several things hidden in the room beforehand, showing them how easy it was to conceal things and how fun it was to go find them. So, you know, that's just a couple of ideas. You know, kind of spice it up, you know, and listen to your members. You know, find out what they would like to find out about. If they're interested in, and say that you've got someone who's doesn't always get to get on HF because of their they live in an apartment or something, can't put up antennas. You know, have a program on HF. Bring some radios in. Maybe even drop a line out the door and make a contact while you're right there. You know, so keep it interesting and but keep it light at the same time.
You were talking a little bit about subjects that are a little bit off the ham radio. I guess I'll say the ham radio circuit, so to speak. And you were talking about geocaching. Now, you know, I've got a son that has just literally driven the family crazy out looking under bridges and underneath manhole covers. I mean, you name it. You know, he has been looking. I think that's an excellent idea. But tell me a little bit about unrelated subjects. That one is great. Tell me some more. What other types of programs have you plugged into an amateur club meeting that hasn't been just amateur radio?
Well, I'm going to have to say that I'm on a bit of a spot right there, because I can't, you know, I'd have to go back through some of the newsletters that we have. All of our new club newsletters are always online, and, you know, what the program's about and everything are in there. But that the one on geocaching is the one that comes to mind, you know. But I varied up, you know. We had a program earlier here about solar power. You know, we had at field day, we had some large solar panels and operated several HF radios up for batteries charged from the sun. So we had a gentleman come in and do it. You know, it was related to radio, but it was mostly about, you know, emergency power and how, you know, you can have a solar panel and batteries and have an emergency set up. So it sometimes you don't want to get too far away from what the core is, but don't be afraid to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, because sometimes it's just not possible to maintain that kind of equilibrium where you have something that's just dead on target about amateur radio every single club meeting. But hams are interested. You know, it's a weird thing I've noticed. There are certain subjects that seems to get their attention. And one of the things that's kind of interesting, and that is I hear a little bit of talk about the SETI groups, people that are, you know, listening to the skies and monitoring the skies for intelligent life. There's a lot of amateurs involved in that. A number of amateurs involved in amateur astronomy that are, I guess, listening to the stars, and I don't know exactly how they incorporate all that. But another topic that seems to get their attention too, and that is the topic of UFOs. It's usually, as soon as you hear someone talking about UFOs, you'll normally find two or three amateurs in the group, you know. So there's subject matter that seems to, you know, that seems to follow that pattern. Geocaching being one of those things. So,
and it doesn't always have to be a technical program. I was just sitting there thinking about that, and one of the more recent programs was because many of our members are also members of the local, like Racies and Aries, the local city is building a new police and, communications complex. And so we had one of the assistant chiefs from the police department come in and give us a lowdown on the new building and how ham radio plays a part in that. I mean, there's up on the very top floor next to the dispatch center, there's a room dedicated solely to ham radio that will be staffed during emergencies and sky-worn schools and things like that. So that one wasn't really necessarily radio-related, but it was of interest to the folks that were there because of the many activities that they participate in.
Well, before we say goodbye here and we bid each other farewell, tell me some of the – give me some call signs and some names of some of the folks in your group that you feel – are folks that really, really jump in the middle of things and help get things done and are just really good club members and amateurs.
Well, I'll start with our president, David Kahn, a KD5LGU. David's a real spark plug. He is in his second and last term as far as serving as our president, but has done a lot he's got a lot of programs going, and when he sees something, he latches onto it. He's done part of our outreach where we, do mailings to hams in the area, new hams and old hams alike. Our vice president is Mark Harper. Now, Mark has the unenviable task of being responsible for lining up a program each month, and that can be very difficult at times. Secretary is a lady by the name of Joyce Johnson, KD5ZYK. She's keeps us in line and keeps us on track. Gary Donaher, AB5RM, is our repeater trustee and one of our very good Elmers. Not that David and the other folks aren't good, but Gary is really good about getting in there and helping new folks. We have a communications committee composed of four people, Craig Green, KB5E, Billy McDonald, AK5DX, Tim Lewis, KD6FWD, and I also serve on the communications committee as well. We are responsible for maintenance of the club-owned repeaters. As a matter of fact, early in the morning we're going to be heading up to do some scheduled maintenance on the repeater in the morning. But there's a number of other folks that get in there and most all of the members are are listening to the repeater, and if someone new comes in there, we'll latch right onto them and get in there and introduce ourselves and find out who that new person is and make them feel welcome.
Now, let's tell the folks your repeater frequency or frequencies and where you have your information net, because if we have shortwave listeners in the area, there's folks that may want to join in or tune in or may not even know that you folks are there.
The main repeater here located here in Mesquite, which is just east of Dallas, is the WJ5J repeater. Is on 145.310 megahertz, and it requires a tone of 162.2. There's also a 70-centimeter machine that carries the call N5AIB. It's on 443.375. It also has a tone of 162.2. The weekly information net is on the WJ5J repeater at 8 p.m. local time on Tuesday nights. It starts promptly at 8 o'clock, and there's several sections for folks to check in, make announcements. There's a section for technical talk. Anybody got any questions? They got a problem they need to bring up. You've got a brain trust right there on the air to tap into. A little swap and shop session, so if anybody has got anything they're looking for or something they'd like to unload or give away or sell, then we usually adjourn after the information net for an eyeball QSO at one of the local restaurants, like a Whataburger or something like that, or a Sonic. If the weather's nice, try to get outside. And the incentive for to sign up to call the net is that if you call the net, you get to say where we go that evening.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
That's interesting. So you, after the net, everybody gets together, they go out, you meet, the old citizens band term, eyeball. At least I remember that when I was a kid, the CBers would say, well, let's go have an eyeball. You know, I haven't heard that on amateur radio much. I don't know. I guess it's because I operate on HF, and, you know, those, the distances prohibit that sort of thing. So,
but sometimes, but we try to get, and usually we have 10 or 12 folks show up, and, you know, they're just chatting and visiting and getting to know each other.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing with us and being on the radio with us. This is great. Andy Karstarfin, he is the public information officer for the Mesquite. Let me say it. Let me get it right here. You say it for me, because I'm
Ham Association of Mesquite.
The Ham Association of Mesquite. I'm going to have it backwards. Ham Association of Mesquite. I'll try to. I've got to remember that. Very unique group. Fantastic having you on the radio with us. This is that's really inspiring to hear all of this. Thank you so much for joining us. This edition of QSO has been brought to you by TW Antennas, Heil Sound, and Gigaparts. We want to invite you to tune in next week, same time, same station, for another program of QSO.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land and of the free and the home of the